Since 1991, ProTaper has led the way in premium control components and prides themselves on providing an exciting, innovative, and complete product line to fulfill the needs of professional racers and weekend riders alike. Through revolutionary ideas like the oversized 1 1/8-inch handlebar and the micro handlebar kit, the only control system purpose-built for youth riders, ProTaper continues to push the limits and transform how we experience riding our motorcycles. Visit ProTaper.com for more. Everyone, welcome to the Kickstart Podcast presented by ProTaper. Don Maeda and Chase Curtis here at SML headquarters, and we have A-Ray at O'Neill HQ and Anton at home in Illinois. But Denver Supercross last weekend, I would like to say it was an amazing race.
Real barn burner.
It's pretty boring, actually.
Yeah, a little bit.
Both races were kind of snoozy. I mean, it was exciting seeing Hunter lead. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny the way, is it Lee Diffie is the announcer?
Yeah.
He's out, there is no way Jetson will pass his brother. And then right then, poof, passes him. But I kind of wondered, you know, like with knowing where Cooper was and knowing that he was gaining more points, I thought, oh, maybe Joe will let him have it, you know? Like,
I was kind of surprised, honestly.
But, I mean, the way he, like, gave Kenny the baby gift at Super Motocross, right? So, yeah. I don't know. What did you guys think of that?
I was watching with my wife the entire time, and she's like, is he going to let Hunter win? Is he going to let Hunter win? And I'm thinking, like, Ricky Bobby in my head. I'm like, I don't know. If Hunter wins, how is Jet supposed to win, right? So, I mean, that's one thing about racing, you know, there's only one winner. With the situation that Jet's in, I feel like he just had to do it, you know what I mean? He had to make that, you know, pass on little brother, or big brother, actually. But shoot, if it was this weekend in Salt Lake and he's got it wrapped up, I would say that's a different scenario. But this weekend, I feel like it's just business as usual, you know. Jet's got to go out and do what he does. But it was definitely like, that was one of the scenarios that was going through a lot of people's head, I feel like, watching the race, just, you know, just hearing it from Samantha, who's, you know, who's just like an average fan, like, you know, everybody else. So that was cool to see. But yeah, I think I want to talk about the track a little bit, because usually the track there, it's super hard packed, you know, there's not much, you know, they can do with it, but the track crew, they put a lot of sand on it, I believe, on Friday. So, I mean, that was, I think that's what made the track a little bit better. You know, you had a little bit of traction in certain areas, you know, and I think that was the reason why. Maybe they can keep adding that over the years and maybe make the dirt a little bit better each year.
I think it was still the driest track we've had in quite some time. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
I mean, like, totally. Dry, hard packy looking.
Yeah, they got to find more dirt, though, because it didn't seem like they have a lot of it there. Like, it can be explained pretty well, because elevation and all of that, with the power being down, like, do you want to make 5-footers out of every single corner that a 250 is going to be bogging on? But, like, just standing on the side of the track, looking over everything, it all did look pretty mellow. And then to A-Ray's point about how much sand that they mixed in, on Friday, it wasn't really that good, because all of it had washed down into the transitions. And because they have to keep watering so much there, because it's Denver and it's dry and it's hard packed. But then that stadium is basically just a big wind tunnel. So even during the Friday race, I mean, there was a good 10 minutes where there was a 20-mile-an-hour like sustained wind that blew all the tough blocks everywhere, that blew all the banners everywhere. So even when they douse it, it's still getting sucked out right away. But then somebody had explained to me, all of the sand that they're mixing into the top of the jumps with the rakes and with the dozers and all of that, as soon as they water it, it all just floods down into the transitions, which made the transition softer. So then that became this other variable to everything. But then if you see the places where it's flat and level, like when they cross across the start straightaway, it looks like concrete on the freeway. And it even takes down rubber just like that, and there would be potholes that were there. So it definitely gave the track a speed limit on what everybody could do. I wouldn't say a lot of guys were thrilled on it, but I got to commend the Dirtworks guys for the big effort that they did to try to improve that soil, because it's going to be a multi-year process that's there. That dirt had been on the floor for a Monster Jam event that was last week, so they pulled all of it up. Mm. Even bigger reason why it would be even drier and more compact too. Last thing, because I know I've rambled. To your point, Don, on the whole Jet Hunter thing, for a minute I was like, oh, dude, this is going to be Osho Bailey. They're going to stop just like the Nations and go over the finish line hand in hand.
Yeah, straight up.
You know what though?
What was the tiller that they had on the front of that skid steer?
They've had that all year.
That seems something that was like new.
No, they've had that all year. That one's pretty cool. Yeah, they've had a couple ones. So that was like just a nice little rototiller. And then I liked the rake that looks like a big comb that they've been pulling everything with too. So I think it's Hydra Bucket is the people that helped them with some of the attachments. Because there is one that has a standard bucket on the front, but then it's got the turning wheel on the back to mulch it up.
Yeah, I've used a couple of those in Farming Sim. They're pretty sick.
Hey, seriously though, the Dirtworks crew, they're like the MVP of the 2024 season. If you think about all the adversity that they've had to face with the weather challenges, and I mean every track has been
different,
way better than it could have been, you know.
True.
It like, could have been bad. I mean, I'd say this is was this the worst track of the year as far as like meh.
Yeah. And I mean, I think
even
it's
the
just
wet
got a
ones
lot of...
were racy.
I think that, and it's just got a lot of variables going against it. It's just at Denver. I think that that's just a unique challenge in itself. We're getting late into the season. They're trying to do all of this other stuff to make the dirt better. And I think like we're just, I know that once we get into the summer this year and then we go into next year, because the tracks and the layout and the obstacles and the rules about how they're getting built has been such a big talking point this year. If it can work out this summer and then into SMX and then into next year where everybody that can come together from the series side to the team side and explain what they want, why they're going about things this way, and spice it back up again, because not a lot of guys have been psyched on the tracks the last few weeks. And this was like the one that took the most heat, but it's not anybody's fault. It's just the situation right now.
Yeah, I will say maybe a little bit of a hot take, but I'm sure it's different if you're there too in person. But on TV over the years, this Denver Supercross is never really one I'm excited to watch.
Mm-hmm. You got to think too. They have to take into factor that, you know, they can't build like these super gnarly rhythms and stuff like that for these guys because they are at altitude and you know it's crazy because a lot of the average fan who hasn't ridden at altitude doesn't really know how plays a toll on the power. It's almost like riding a dirt bike just with the rear brake on the entire time. I remember, you know, whenever I used to race Denver, Salt Lake, anything of that sort in the elevation, I was always in first gear. And the only time I was in second gear was in the whoops. Like, so pretty much like first gear all the way around the track. I mean, you know, this is, you know, whenever I was riding for smaller teams, you know what I mean? Or on my own, you know, that I didn't have access to, you know, data or all that shit that the factory guys have. Now, whenever I was on Factory Yamaha, we raced at Lakewood, Colorado, which is at, you know, high elevation. They had entire package that they put into the bikes before that. So, you know, it's like the gap from the factory guys to the, you know, regular, you know, factory exactly. supported or privateer level. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge gap, you know? So, yeah, like even like thinking like fantasy or anything of that sort. It's like I was always gonna go for like a factory guy or something like that, play it safe here, just because of like how much it was, just how much difference it is in the bikes, right? Because God, it makes the bikes feel so slow. I can't imagine the guys on the 250Fs. You know, I mean, I remember whenever I was fat riding a 250F, you know, at elevation, I had to double the triple most of the laps because my fat ass couldn't make it.
Hey, but, where is it? Where does the altitude come into bigger play, at Thunder Valley or the Denver Supercross?
I mean, I would say Thunder Valley, just because it's an outdoor track, you know, and the bike just feels like more of a turd because they're ripping the track, you know, deep, and you know, you're having to, you know, keep up your momentum, keep up the speed and everything, because if you do get buried in a turn, you're just starting from zero, you know, and there's hills, there's elevation, you know, it's tough. I would say it's more of a disadvantage at Denver outdoor, like at Thunder Valley, than it is at the Supercross track, because obviously the Supercross track, it's hard packed. It's not super deep, you know, it's honestly a little bit better, you know, maybe a little bit safer that it is like super hard packed and stuff. Cause if it was like super tacky or something, it's dragging the bike down even more. Mm-hmm.
A lot of first gear starts this weekend. A lot of talk about that. A lot of guys on Friday really making it a point to do your start on Saturday, doing as many as you could because they knew it was going to be down on power. So that was the biggest thing. And Levi told me on Friday he likes it like that because he rode stock bike so much that that adaption back to the bike being slower, it does take a lot to get used to. But he likes it because it feels like an old stock bike then. So I see Avery's point. I'll give you a
Were there,
quick. What's that? Go ahead,
oh, I
Avery.
was just going to say, were there more people in the pits doing starts? Like, I mean, they showed it on the broadcast
Yeah,
this
I saw
weekend with
that.
Jet.
Yeah. I wasn't in the pits to see if there was more people doing it, but it was definitely like, look, a dirt start and the great start, far, far different thing. But all day Friday, if a guy could do the media session and circle back and do a dirt start, they were doing it just to feel how different the reflexes would be if you had to drop down a gear or not, because it's going to throw the whole thing off. Hey, Avery, I'll give you one thing that Brock Glover gave me because I didn't know it was this way. I always thought that altitude and elevation were the same word, just like interchangeable. Glover was very adamant to tell me elevation is terrain and then altitude is height in the air. So we all learned something this weekend. My bad. Hey, Glover told me too. And when the Golden
Interesting.
Boy gives you a lesson, you got to take it.
I
Yeah,
guess you're
that's
right.
true. Spread wisdom.
Did he say fucking unbelievable? Hey,
Yeah.
getting back to the Hunter Jet thing, like, dude, Hunter has really come on recently, right? Like, dude, fast qualifier last week and like, but super solid. I'm thinking like he wouldn't want Jet to let him win. You know, he wants to win it straight up, fair and square. Because I mean, yeah, little brother lets you win. Like, yeah, it's great. And in the record books, it's going to look like that in years. But Hunter's good enough in the right instance on the track. He's going to win, I think.
Yeah, and he's got that. He's like kind of you touched on it. He's got that cockiness about him where
Yeah.
he definitely wouldn't want anything handed to him,
Yeah.
yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
You know, it's funny is like Samantha, my wife is just, you know, a casual fan. But during his interview, she goes, his personality is a lot different. He's very eloquent. And she goes, yeah, he wouldn't want his little brother to let him win. Even she picked up on that, you know.
I think
But,
even the time that he spent in front and then the time behind Jet, that's a bigger confidence lesson than anything could be because, like, yo, dude, I know I can do it now. Like, granted, I did it on my own and then I kept pace with the guy. He's only going to get stronger as this goes on. And Hunter needed that. He did need a nice little boost because he has been building all year. And we've talked so much that it's been him and this Justin Cooper, like back and forth, who's really the rookie, who's doing better. And they've been pretty tit for tat. But yeah, Hunter just took a big step forward on that one.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it had to been cool for
Like
them though.
another, what was
Go
that?
ahead, Andrew.
Or no, I was just gonna say like with Hunter, with the 250 class and everything that we've seen, right? Like if you look at a timeline, this is a little quick for him, to be honest. You know, being this far up in the, leading laps in the 450 class, being fastest qualifier. I mean, we didn't really see this from him, in the 250 class. It took him a little bit of time, so I feel like if we give him just a little bit more time, maybe another year, next year, I mean, shoot, I mean, I feel like he can throw out some, some wins and be up there in the championship.
Yeah,
Don,
absolutely.
did you ever race Ross? Like, did you and Ross ever race? Like, just I know the age difference and the speed difference and all that, but were
Not
you
on
ever
the
in a
field.
moto?
Definitely the speed difference. If you talk to Ross, Don was a fucking goon.
Yeah, dude. Ross has lost more speed than I've ever had, right? The only time I ever raced Ross was in the adult mini class at Ascot. And I don't know why, but I was able to hole shot every adult mini race. And so he would pass me like on the first lap.
See,
Yeah, no, there is no comparison between Ross and I. It'd be like,
I only raced Kyle one time, and he came to California, and it was when like I was babysitting him for the summer. Scariest thing, scariest moto of my entire life. And like Kyle was better than me, but that fear of like what's gonna happen to my baby brother out there, I was riding like shit the whole time. And then he crashed and blew his nose open, so that ended the day. I could only imagine like how that is, just to like put it all in check and you know that's your brother there, but you have to see him as another competitor and all of the things that they were doing. Like, wow, man, that had to be quite the 20 minutes for both boys. And then for Dazzy and Emma too, like his mom and dad, their mom and dad to see that happen. Like, dude, that's a heavy one. That's a
Yeah.
big, that's a lot going on the track.
Yeah, for sure. That was the coolest thing about the race, actually. I mean, seeing that brothers won too, but everything beyond that, I was like, eh. You know what sucks, guys, is So on the broadcast now, the past couple weeks, like, oh, making a big deal about Cooper's thumb, hand, wrist, whatever. Like, we knew about that.
Yeah, I was surprised they aired it out this weekend.
Yeah, but I mean, we knew about that a long time ago, but we were told, do not say anything, right?
But we have, though.
Right after, huh?
But we have, dude. We mentioned it 2.5 weeks ago.
Well, yeah, but even like, but when we first found out, we didn't say anything.
Yeah, but then like
sworn to secrecy, right? But like it's like, what at what point is it like, oh yeah, we're gonna tell everyone now and let it out? Because like the broadcast wouldn't say it unless it was good to say, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird because like we again, dude, we've known, like we've known, and we mentioned it. I want to say it was after Seattle. Because we were like, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Like, this was in these last few races since he had gotten injured that we had brought it up on here. And then it's like, it's been hidden, but it's not been that well hidden because there's a couple little things on the bike that you could tell, like, oh, that's definitely helping out. And he's mentioned arm pump so much. So, like, we, like I said, we had mentioned it a couple weeks ago, and not, hopefully this doesn't piss anybody off at us, but, like, for it to be so surprising that it happened this weekend, I thought more people knew. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, there is a pretty, like, there's a pretty big tell on his motorcycle that he's been having a problem.
What is it?
They had the grip shaved down.
Okay. Yeah, I seen you take a picture of that.
Yeah. And that's been, that's been out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they made such a big deal about it on the broadcast, right? I like how they got the that clip of him landing with his hand kind of funny.
On top of the grip, yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's been since, well, the race he won with, the where he said his
I think it was arms Alabama. Were like a
boner or something, right?
I think it happened in Alabama.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they said. He did finally come out, and even on his Instagram, he said it happened in Alabama. And then
I thought it was weird that he came out after the race on Instagram about it.
So I didn't know, like, that it was finally coming out. I hadn't seen the broadcast. I hadn't seen Race Day Live or anything like that. And then they cut to his face in that podium interview or that side interview with JT.
Mm-hmm.
Pissed. Like, super. You could just tell that all the wind's out of the sails now. And they've been trying. And then Coker explained in an interview on Racer X and some of the other same stuff that we've been hearing, too. It did get better for a few weeks. Cooper wasn't able to ride, so then it did improve. But then in the last few weeks, knowing the challenges here, we have to find just that little bit in the one day that we do get to ride has made it worse. So finding that extra speed and intensity has probably caused it to be a bigger problem. Luckily, it's not like that issue that Dylan had a couple years ago, like when he hurt his thumb at Paula, and if they didn't do emergency surgery, it was going to kill the tendon and all these things. Like, good that Cooper's been able to manage it through this far, and if he does get surgery in the next few days after Salt Lake wraps up and then takes the summer to heal and comes out for SMX. I mean, he'll be feisty.
I was going to say, what does this mean?
I mean, especially
he's going to get it fixed, right?
Especially now that Eli's racing outdoors too.
So. Yeah, but Eli hurt his thumb also on Friday or on Saturday night. So that explains the drop back. But dude, Eli had a tough day. Eli was rough in practice. He had two spills early in the day. And then that main event one was weird. And then it just turned into him dropping back. But to find out that he has a hurt thumb, too, wasn't a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Is that from the case or from the corner?
I think they said the corner crash.
Mm. Dude. Mm. Okay, speaking of corner crash, how about Malcolm?
Oh, your guy.
Dude, I have never seen someone go through a turn that fast like that.
That was the perfect situation to compare the where there's maybe some sand added to the soil to make it good, and then where it just was blown completely away in the hard pack.
Even remember earlier when in his hot lap at the end of qualifying, when he did that Brody in that flat turn and how pissed he was, I was just like, dude, look at him sending it.
Mm-hmm.
Was this on Race Day Live?
Yeah, I think so. It was Race Day Live. They're filming him right at the end because, you know, he qualified second fastest, but his last lap, he was sending it so fast. Like, and then he went through the whoops and that right flat turn. He just.
It was so he didn't obliterate Jet.
Oh.
Yeah, because. Nice. So I didn't see that. I heard about this lap, but I didn't see Malcolm's lap because I filmed Jet's last lap, which was his fastest one. And I'd love to talk about that because if you watch that lap, it's not the cleanest lap, but it's pretty damn fast. But then as Jet goes through the whoops, he kind of is on to the far left side, bobbles and then cuts all the way to the right, and you just see this white flash go into the inside of that turn and lose it. And then everybody else had been saying, that was Malcolm's fast lap, that was this, that was that, and that crash messed it up. I wish I could, I got to watch race day live to see Malcolm's lap
now. Dude, it was incredible. But the funniest thing, too, is you could see how mad he is afterwards. Mm-hmm. He's just like, you can see him cussing. But
I like the Ninja Turtle helmet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Ninja Turtle font on the back now. Better weekend for Malcolm.
Nice.
It was a better weekend for Malcolm, for sure. You know, I mean, gosh, it's almost like it's just too little too late, right? I mean, it feel like he's just now starting to hit his stride, you know, and he's got two races left. Obviously, he is doing outdoors, though. I mean, so we'll see how that goes. Now, yeah,
where does this whole – because I heard that on the Pulp show that they were kind of surprised he's doing outdoors as well. Like, where was the talk that he was
never done out. I mean, he hasn't done outdoors in so long.
Well, he's been hurt, though.
Yeah,
but
still, the drive isn't there, dog. The drive to go to Unadilla in August is not there. No offense, Mal. We love you, but we know that you don't want to do that shit either.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. But do you guys think that a little bit of this stuff, like with Barcia getting better, with Malcolm getting better towards the end of the season, it goes back to a little bit of the conversation that Anton had with Roger, just with getting the bike better and trying new things and trying to get out of that just sort of shell that they've been in for so long?
Barcia, for sure. I'm not sure about Malcolm.
Well, they were both out here 3 weeks ago, so.
But I don't think Malcolm has changed the part. I think he's made some changes. Yeah. But I think also, and Malcolm's been very open about it, being gone for as long as he was and then trying to refine the pace of the pack, especially when it's gone up another level, I think that's been the hardest thing for him. I mean, dude, straight up, we've watched it so many times. I got flamed in the comments a few weeks ago. He just gets put in bad situations, and then it just ruins his whole race. Going into the first turn, that one time that he bumped Jet, he was in the top 10, and then he gets nudged out, and then he's 18th. It's over, you know, and he's had to do that so many times this year, more times than I think the TV cameras caught.
Yeah. He did. I mean, like Avery said, though, the pace, obviously qualifying, and then him and Chase coming through the pack in that main event after the first turn was – really, really impressive.
Yeah, Chase came from last, right?
Yeah, and Mookie was probably 20th, 21st. So.
There for a second, I thought Chase was going to get up even further than he did because he was ripping and he was going through guys super quick. But, I mean, was it the heat race that he had a tough heat race too as well, right? Chase?
I believe. I think it was okay. I don't remember like offhand. Mm-hmm. I just remember the main event one being the bigger surprise. And then he had a couple laps in qualifying too, where, again, to your point, A-Ray, he's pushing the edge. He's trying to find it. He's like slamming off the curbs and the rocks and the walls that are there to go faster. And that's definitely something that we've seen improve in the last 3 weeks, because I said the same thing last week after Philly. He's pushing. He's trying to go fast now. They've cracked the shell on that one.
I was just going to say, like, if you look at his bike from Anaheim 1 to now, it is so much, like, his suspension forks shock just looks so much softer. It just looks like he's more comfortable. Looks like he can skim the whoops better. It looks like he's getting back to his normal self. So, it's so crazy to me to, like, watch his Anaheim 1 setting to what his bike looks like now.
Yeah. Do you guys think, obviously we saw him kind of tuck the front, lose the front twice in the main event this past weekend. Is that more so him being finally at a spot where he's comfortable on the bike and able to push it now, like he was last year, just pushing the bike all the time? Or is that kind of track dependent, just how the conditions were this Saturday?
Probably both.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of both, because, like, I mean, going back to the bike setting, his suspension looks really soft, to be honest. You know, for Supercross, it looks like but that's the way he likes it. That's the way his Honda was set up. You know, he likes it more of like a softer, you know, suspension setting, I would assume. And it's almost like that's where he likes it. That's where he can push. That's where he feels like he can go fast. But at the same time, whenever it is under a load and it's low in the stroke, that's sometimes, you know, where it can, you know, the front end can tuck or wash out. And then, you know, obviously the track is like ice. So.
Yeah.
What do you guys think has gotten into Jason Anderson as of late?
To where we're at. Just hard pack. Hard pack, yeah. The East Coast thing, like, he's going to spend even more time this summer out on the East Coast to figure out the soft stuff, because they know, you know, look at how many races are Ohio, New York, PA, whatever. So they're going to get that dialed in. But yeah, he's good on the hardback, and he's figured that out.
Mm-hmm. Anton, this weekend at the races, was there any more buzz about rider number two at Cowie?
I heard it's just going to be one guy. I heard it's just supposed to be Jason, but we'll see. Could always change. But yeah, I haven't heard anything about them wanting to put anybody else in there. I like Tickle though. I'm sure that there is something else. I liked, what was it, Tickle at Philly when he went out and did the warm up on the spin bike and all of his gear minus knee braces. That was good.
Yeah, did you that see was that? Funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know, man. Because I think it's an option to do a few.
That would be good, dude. I would love to see Tick go back at it. And I'm sure
right? What number would he be?
He said he has 220? Two in mind.
120?
Is that?
He said he has two in mind when I asked him last week. I just don't know which ones. He wouldn't clarify.
Like 220 or something?
Yeah, maybe. Huh. What was his amateur number? He had a long three digit. I can't remember what it was.
I mean, I could look it up. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, someone in the comments said he should run 7-1-1 since Max took his.
Dude, and how about the comments just blowing up? Oh, Master Pool.
Oh, my
Master
God,
Pool.
Dude. It's crazy.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, do they need to fill it? Like,
no.
When teams fill, it's because the title sponsor wants them to have that many riders, right? So, Monster.
But I think
we need to call Eric Johnson.
As much data as Brock has just in seat time on this bike, him doing a couple motos at a couple different tracks is going to be big. You know, I watch a lot of MotoGP, and I've mentioned this before, but every now and then a team will be able to file a wildcard rider that's one of their full-time test riders to come in and really get testing data in real-life conditions, because those tracks are much different than any place else's. And Brock's not able to replicate what's happening. I mean, no matter how many laps he does at Paula, it's not the same as what it's going to be two Saturdays from now, three Saturdays from now. So that would be good data for him to come in and get, especially to help clarify the performance of what this KX is really capable of.
I wonder if we'll see him next or tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Because the last couple of weeks, he's been riding without number 20s on his bike.
Really?
Yeah, he hasn't been. I just thought it was, before I heard anything last week, I thought it was just, oh, maybe it's a stock bike or something.
Oh, if he shows up with 120 tomorrow, or 220, 420.
420 is taken.
Is it?
420 is taken by the people's, there is a people's champion out there. I can't remember who it is.
Along the lines of big pie in the sky what ifs, Blake Baggett showed up at Glen Helen and raced this weekend.
I can't believe he bought a bike.
Yeah, he went to AEO Power Sports last week, bought a 450 Rockstar Edition, was on the starting line this weekend at Glen Helen.
Yeah, so, I mean, how did he look? Did he look like, I mean, just like he did whenever he retired?
No, I mean, he's rusty, obviously. I mean, Josh Moseman caught him, passed him, fell, caught back, passed him again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Moseman's fast, but Blake is a whole different caliber of rider, right? So he's rusty for sure, but
yeah,
I don't know. He just loves stirring the pot, you know? Like, I'm shocked he went and bought the bike, right? Because when he showed up and did that little Instagram edit, I was laughing, and I just text him. I go, stirring the pot. He's like, ha-ha, I love it.
I was surprised he didn't go buy an SR to stir the pot even more.
Yeah, right? But I mean, I don't know. I mean, but so, you know, off of social media knowledge, he rode once, bought a bike, showed up and raced, right? With no numbers, jersey with nothing on the back. But I don't know. It's good to have him back at the track, though. He's a crack up. And actually, yeah, there's a video on our website now of his race.
Oh, that's cool.
But anything else in the 450s?
I wonder if Baggett's going to come out and do that stopwatch nationals at Glen Helen, because he could throw down a heater. Ooh. He knows the code. Yeah. Dude, he could make that whole bike payment one day.
Yeah. Straight up. You know, Dylan Ferrandis, I mean, I know he was just out for a few weeks, you know, I mean, with sickness, illness, injury, whatnot. But, I mean, for him to hop back into the series, to to, you know, be around the same spot where he was, you know, whenever he left. I feel like that's something to be to be stoked on, you know. Just, I don't know, it's tough definitely with all the fast guys that we have, you know, right now in the series. And with, I mean, yeah, we have a few guys out, but not that many. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, for him to still be where he's at, I think it's going to be good. I think he's going to be a weapon outdoors. I think he's going to be really good. From what I'm hearing, he's very, very stoked on the bike and the outdoor settings. So, should be good.
Do you guys think Jay Coop kind of, it looked like he was just kind of hanging behind Webb, like he didn't want anything with trying to make a pass?
Yeah, I feel like Jay Coop, I mean, he's like the silent assassin almost, right? He is the most, I feel like, underrated 450 guy right now. I mean, with, you know, I mean, I think he's right there with Hunter, you know, with a good start. Say if he starts top three, I feel like he maybe could stay there, you know, at a certain racetrack. So, I mean, I think, I feel like he's like the silent assassin right now. He's riding good.
A lot of experience he's picked up this year too, because he's raced with everyone, he's passed everyone, he's been passed by everyone, he's put in the fastest laps. Jay Coop is really stacked up by all the little tokens he's going to need to progress his 450 career. I know that, mm-hmm. like, you know, we're late in the season, there's only one race left, and, you know, it's 20 points between Jet and Cooper, so the wind of the championship sails has kind of been taken out. But I mean, Eli and Chase are tied for third right now, so whoever does better in that one's going to do better. And I think that that's a pretty good storyline, because two way different guys. Like, did we think Eli was going to be top three at any point, especially early in the season, how this thing started? And the same goes for Chase. And I think both guys have had big years, you know, Eli coming back from the obvious and then Chase having the big change that's there. And we were mentioning it earlier, and I know this has been a big topic. It's kind of odd to see how much Chase has been criticized for, like, his lack of speed this year, because he has been more consistent, which is what everybody's wanted, and he stayed off the ground until the last few weeks when he's pushing the edge. So he's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Oh, he's too fast. He crashes too much. Well, he's consistent now, but he's not quick. So that's there. Mm-hmm. And then going back, like, through the points, because there is some movement that could happen. Like, we know that AP and Ken's points are frozen for the year, but then AP is, you know, if Malcolm has a good night, he's going to bump AP out of the top 10. So there's some more money there that can be made.
Oh, wow.
Hunter and Barsha are tied at 200 points right now, and Justin Cooper is 5 points ahead of them. So there's a little bit of movement that's there. And then, you know, if Justin can score 18 points in a night, which is a lot, he's going to bump Roczen out and get the top six. So there is some things that's going on there. And then you go further back in the field. You know, it's a bummer that Shane or that Benny's gone, because Benny had been riding good and he'd been stacking points there. But there's some guys that could make some things happen. Like, if you're into fantasy, if you want to see little bits of movement, just go look at the 450 championship going into this weekend and find some guys to pull for to keep the night exciting, because it could be a snoozer.
Anton, are you on points right now?
Yeah.
Where is Craig at?
Craig is, I just saw it, 23rd with 39 points.
Oh. Okay, yeah. So he should be good for outdoors, though. I was just trying to think how many he's got to do pretty good for finals, I guess, or got to do a majority of the outdoors.
Yeah, but then a lot of the guys that are ahead of him, between Freese, Nichols, Justin Hill, Dean, Adam's gone, Benny's going to not do the whole outdoor summer, Prado's there, that's not a factor. Like, he's going to just go straight up,
yeah,
just out of, like, who's there and who's not by circumstance. So the next few weeks will get interesting. And then I think, like, by the third outdoor national, once we go into that break, we'll really know how the SMX stuff is shaping up.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break to hear from our supporting sponsors.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Cooper Webb here to tell you all about Alpha Motocross Dynamics, an online training and fitness program that Brandon Hartraft and I have created. We wanted to develop a program to help riders who can't afford the cost of training facilities or riding coaches at the track. We've got three programs to help all riders, from beginner to pro, and from full-time racers to weekend warriors and even vets. Whether you need help with riding technique, motocross fitness, mental strategies, or diet and nutrition, we have affordable packages to suit every budget. Check us out at alphamotocrossdynamics.com.
X-Brand Goggles was launched in 2008, and over the past two decades, they've earned a reputation as one of the elite eyewear choices in our sport. The newest offering, the Lucid Goggle, features an XDO injection molded lens for exceptional optical clarity, as well as superior protection against the massive roost that modern day four-stroke bikes throw. At Swap Moto Live, we love the Lucid goggle for its huge field of vision. Check them out at xbrand.com. That's eksbrand.com. If you're on the West Coast and you're looking for a one-stop shop, you need to visit the guys at STR Motorsports, formerly known as Shock Therapy Racing. With over 30 years of experience, your bike will be in great hands. Whether you're looking for a custom performance suspension revalve or just a basic rebuild, they've got you covered. STR also offers motor building services. Whether you need a stock engine rebuilt or a full-blown race motor, they're the place to go. Conveniently located in Wildomar, California, they're very close to Lake Elsinore and Parrish Raceway. Additionally, they maintain a full stock of oils, tires, and tubes. They can get pretty much anything you need. Check them out at shocktherapysuspension.com.
Bill's Pipes has been producing championship-winning high-performance exhaust systems for all types of off-road motorcycles since 1974. Whether you're a mini racer or simply a premix burning diehard, our two-stroke pipes and silencers deliver unbeatable performance gains. Our four-stroke exhaust systems provide affordable performance gains and are available for motocross, off-road, ATV, and side-by-side applications. Best of all, every product from Bill's Pipes is produced and assembled in the USA. Check us out at billspipesusa.com.
Did you know that in addition to being some of the coolest people on motocross, the crew at WUSA are the official importers of Talon, Kite, and Edge hubs, as well as the leading resource for DID and Excel rims. Through the years, we've tested plenty of aftermarket wheels, and the wheel building crew at WUSA can't be beat. WUSA is the source for all things associated with wheels, including sprockets, spoke wrenches, tire irons, and more. Mention Swap Moto Live when ordering anything from WUSA and get a nice little discount too. Check them out at WUSA.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan Villapoto. Now that I'm living the retired life and not bound to factory team sponsors, I'm able to choose my partners when it comes to building my bikes. I choose Backyard Designs to create my motorcycle graphics because they do a great job. Their kits look great, go on easy, and last long.
Backyard Design has the most comprehensive and user-friendly graphic website in the sport. Use the discount code SWATMOTO at checkout for a discount at backyarddesignsusa.com.
G'day guys, this is 9-time X Games gold medalist Jared McNeil. Off the motocross bike, I spend plenty of time cross-training on my intense mountain bike. From the super fast and efficient Sniper cross-country bike to the aggressive Primer and Tracer trail bikes, or even the amazing Taser e-bike. Every Intense is designed and developed in the United States and built to the highest standards. A life on two wheels certainly includes pedals too. So give the crew at IntenseCycles.com a look.
What's up? This is Christian Craig. As a motocross racer, being in top physical shape is a must, and my favorite way to train is cycling. And whether it's road biking or mountain biking, I rely on Roy Cyclery to keep my bikes in perfect running order.
Roy Cyclery has been servicing Old Town Upland, California since 1962. Mention the Swap Moto Live podcast for additional discounts in the show.
Guts Racing, the leaders in seat technology. Go to gutsracing.com today and design your custom seat cover. We try to ship all custom seat covers within 36 business hours. We also offer free shipping to the lower 48 states. Once again, that's gutsracing.com.
Over the past 40 years, EVS Sports has established themselves as the leaders in innovation and technology when it comes to designing protection gear for today's motocross riders. Athletes like RJ Hampshire, Kyle Chisholm, Axel Hodges, and Travis Pastrana all wear EVS when they race, ride, or whatever Travis decides to do that day. Check out EVS-sports.com to gear up like the pros.
Everyone, welcome back to the Kickstart Podcast presented by Pro Taper. Before we get into racing talk, couple things I wanted to bring up. One, I thought it was super cool how Levi Kitchen on the podium sent his best wishes to our friend Damian Campos out at Toyota Vescondito. He is having a tough time with some health issues. Don't want to disclose that, but definitely let's all keep him in our thoughts and prayers. Damian's a solid guy. Supported us at Transworld Motocross for 10 years. One of the good guys, one of the people that we care about in the sport. Also, this past weekend at Glen Helen, I was racing there Saturday, and shortly after I left, our friend Robert Reisinger, who is a partner in 6D, he's actually the mastermind, the engineer that developed the omnidirectional suspension in the 6D helmet. He had a bad crash coming back onto the start straightaway, and crashed so hard he went into cardiac arrest. I got an update from Bob Weber late yesterday. He's in critical condition. He has a broken C2 vertebrae in his neck, and he can communicate with the doctors by blinking, but as of now he has no feeling, and he is on a breathing machine because he cannot breathe on his own. Last I heard, there was a surgery scheduled last night, but it got postponed because of some swelling. So the spinal cord is not severed or damaged. It's swollen. So let's all keep Robert in our thoughts and prayers as well, that, you know, things come back, feeling comes back. And yeah, I mean, Robert's in his 60s, but still hauls ass. And one of the guys that's made a big difference in the sport, you know, coming up with the technology of this helmet. So, yeah, man, there's been some tough weekends at Glen Helen this year locally, dude, right? You know, had two deaths and then Robert now.
Yeah, a lot.
And then there's the 85 kid.
I feel like with the 85 kid, yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was at LACR. Mm-hmm. Carmody, but yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's such a bummer, man.
Yeah.
But
it's just a reminder again that this sport, all the four of us, it's given us everything. But at the same time, it's dangerous. So you got to invest in the proper safety equipment and use good sense and live every day to its fullest, I think. Do not resuscitate for me. But what else? Bet online?
No, we're just going to continue with
lost my sad news. I lost my ass, you know. I was all stoked because there's those match races.
Yeah. Did you do one of those?
You know, I tried, but I messed up. I did a whole shot in a map. Anyway, I lost everything. I feel
like you could have made some good money on Joe, though, right? Well, what were his odds? Do you know?
I've been betting on Joe, too, because, you know, the little sentimental favorite.
I think when I looked at it, it was plus 400 initially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang. But yeah, that would have been a good one for sure.
I bet on Levi for the 250 win and 450 win. I bet on Tomac because I thought the hometown cheering would push him to the top, cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm. I will say that I did bet on the Derby, but I ended up losing. I think I only made like $6.
Good job.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What else?
Like what did I
mean, 250 class, 250 class. I mean, I feel like it's just, man, it's awesome right now. It's really, really good. So you know, good. Oh man, like going into the last round, I feel like this is just one of the things that, you know, you wish for in a championship almost. Like coming into the last round, both top guys are tied. Yeah. I mean, it's anyone's ball game right now. I feel like, you know, with the last round being a showdown, that's going to make things even better. People are going to be doing math in their head the entire day, I feel like. So, yeah, I mean, it's just going to be full on just battle to the death, I hope, you know. And then you throw all the East guys in there as well, like Deegan, Bial, you know, they're fighting for their own championship in itself. So this is like three races inside of a race.
What's the point spread between Vial and Deegan right now?
16, 12.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was 16.
So it's pretty safe for Vial.
Yeah, yeah. It's 15 or 16, I think.
Something crazy has to happen there.
But still, showdown.
Mm-hmm. Showdown.
Like, dude, for RJ and Levi to take it to the wire like this, mm-hmm. and then for Joe to get the win, I mean, that was the... Everybody standing around the starting gate, even before the 250 main event started, was like, who you got? Who you got? And I think we all pretty much agreed that it wasn't going to be one of the two title guys to win that race, that it was going to be somebody like Joe, or it was either Jordan Smith or Nate Thrasher that were going to make it interesting, just
because
that's how this year is. Mm-hmm. Joe was ripping. Joe did
whole
15
shot.
Flawless minutes, man. That was good.
And I'm pretty sure he only rode outdoors last week, too.
And he said he was sick too.
That makes sense.
Bro, Joe is so funny. Like, he is the funniest professional racer I think that there is. So when we got to the rental car place at the airport yesterday, Joe was returning in front of us. And like, he just jumps out and he's got his little black pants on and this nice shirt. And he pulls his four-wheel OGO bag through the airport. No team merch on, no monster hat, no nothing. You would just think he's just this little Japanese business executive just flying through Denver. Fucking, it's great, dude. You would never think that he is one of the... Yeah, you would never think that he's one of the gnarliest dudes and then he had just did what he did 12 hours before that. It was so funny.
Yeah.
No trophy, no nothing, no jacket.
Yeah, just cruising. Oh, man. What was Nate Thrasher thinking going into the corner?
I only saw it once.
Oh, man. I mean, props to him. Like, I mean, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, he came in hot. But
did they hit?
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the broadcast, they said they didn't hit. And then RJ said he got slammed.
Oh, bro.
I think RJ said he took a shoulder hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a shoulder hit, but it was like, it was enough to where it took Thrasher's hand off his bars.
Yeah.
He knocked his hand off his bars.
I only saw it once. I saw the replay and I just like looked up and I just went, oh, fuck. Like, it was a big one.
Now, in the first turn, was that Juju that dive bombed and didn't make the return? Because, like, Joe went in and someone, I'm pretty sure it was Juju, came in super hot.
I think it was Viney.
Viney? No, Viney wasn't in the main.
No, that was LCQ. Viney didn't make the main.
Yeah,
but Joe tucked it in, came out the whole shot. But somebody, I think it was Juju, just fucking.
It might have been him because he was
back. It might have been Juju. No, Juju got landed on. Juju. Mm-hmm. Got collected with like another rider, but he came back to 10th. He was riding good, but yeah, I don't know if that was Juju, but it was somebody for sure.
Juju and Rider D were showing the KTM Future Challenge of what's up. Just those two guys doing laps together through that whole main event, coming through the field. Juju was doing good though. He was coming back.
Yeah.
What else? 250 class.
I mean, dude, a lot of these privateers are ripping, you know. I mean, like Phil Nicoletti, he's
sixth?
Like full on qualified. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got sixth, but he qualified like 20th or something. Hell, who even knows? But yeah, I don't think he did that that 3-3 all day after the on off or the two table over single. I don't think he did that all day. And you know, for him to get sixth is awesome. Him and Cole Thompson were battling a lot in that main event. You know.
Just Thompson and Waisman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Best result ever for Team Solitaire. Both guys going seventh.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Seventh and eighth. Yeah, it's good.
Their bikes looked good again this weekend. Did they do the San Diego scheme again?
It was like, maybe. I was told it was just white plastic and some other stuff and Heartbeat hot sauce that was pretty big, but I thought the green stripe looked good. And then I liked the gear. I thought the gear looked nice. And then the big R Jerky logo on the shoulder was nice.
Yeah. No way. Dude, that team's awesome.
So the team's awesome.
So sick.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they've had
props to Liat. They've done some cool like custom stuff for them this all year.
Mm-hmm. Even that retro stuff that they did at San Diego, the mountain bike thing that they made for Moto, and then Chris and Ryan have done a great job getting sponsors over there. Like the crocodile cloth deal that they have, those cleaning wipes, that's a nice little deal. The Heartbeat hot sauce thing is major. They had the Bussin' with the Boys deal at Nashville 2 weeks ago. So yeah, they're doing what they got to do.
Hey, is Racetech still doing their engines?
Racetech's doing the engines. Thompson's got factory connection suspension, and then Wagerman's got Enzo suspension.
Gotcha. That's super cool to have Racetech engines. You know, like and dude, look at that. We got two guys inside the top 20 in Supercross at what was it? Not altitude, right?
Mm-hmm. Elevation. Shout out Glover.
Yeah,
elevation.
Yeah. So two of those dudes. I mean, that just goes to show that you know Racetech, they know what they're doing. You know. Whether it be suspension, engines, whatever it is, yeah, they got it handled.
Hey, how many hours do you have in the factory edition now?
I think there's like 17, maybe.
You should probably get some 50, fork services done.
50 for a regular person.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, Ray, let's get the Racetech spring conversion going on that.
Okay.
450 SXF that you have, and maybe we need to have them look at the motor.
Probably should, yeah.
Yeah, like dog ears on the clutch.
I will say that
I had that thing at like 30,000 RPM when I endoed my brains out, so.
I did look at the air filter the other day, and it I mean, the bike still runs. So, I mean, yeah, it's good. It does. Dude, that thing does need a tune up, man. Like the chain is like slapping. The sprocket is like almost about to lose some teeth. So I just been riding it. It's been great bike though, man. I love that thing. It's been good.
Maybe with some race tech service and spring conversion forks, you can keep old man Rich Taylor in your sights at Sutter's. Oof.
Yeah, maybe so. Dude, he still rips, man. He still rides good.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, you know, yeah. We were supposed to have a guest on today, but Avery, you gotta get on your Alpha training program before we do too much stuff. So that way the bike's set up.
I got my schedule yesterday.
So wait, what is the, Alpha Training Dynamics, right? Brandon Hartraff, Cooper Webb. Like, what is the purpose for you to get into it? Like just to shape up, lose weight, get back and
They have Brandon can do it all, you know. So pretty much like. I don't know. I've just been letting myself go to shit, right? Like, I mean, I feel like I could better myself in all aspects, better myself at work, you know, off the bike, on the bike, hell, even with like marriage, whatever, you know, just be better. I just need to be better. And, you know, I just wanted to, start by getting in shape and really, you know, set the alarm at 5 o'clock and just, and do some work, you know, before getting to work. Right. And, dude, Brandon, he's been a friend of mine, you know, for a long time now. We've been teammates on several teams and, you know, we talk pretty much every day. So, I mean, for me, it was a no-brainer. It's super awesome. I hit him up like, hey, dude, like I need a program. So I signed up for Alpha Training and now he's sending me my program. It's awesome. Yeah.
That's
the main thing. Even though like I raced and trained for a lot of years, right? Like, I mean, I've done it all. I've had good trainers, all of that. But at the same time, like, I know what to do. But at the same time, I'm still sitting there like the monkey is just like, it always works better whenever you have a schedule, you know? And you know, he's got a lot of knowledge and, you know, he's worked with a lot of great trainers and he knows, you know, what to do, what not to do. It's just always better whenever you have a set schedule each day. It just makes things a lot easier, you know? So for the average person, it works. It's awesome. And I would recommend it to anyone, you know, no matter what the schedule.
Hey, Ray, how does it work? Is there a Alpha app or does he have to use Training Peaks or does he just email you a schedule of what you need to do?
He'll just email you a schedule, you know, he'll ask you questions, that type of thing. You know, and then on Sundays, he just, he'll email you a schedule for the week starting on Monday. You'll have your gym workout on there. And if you have any questions about it, you know, he'll put like a YouTube link or anything on how to do something, it's super beneficial. It's nice. Just email. And then, you know, if you have, like a Polar watch or a heart rate watch, anything of that sort, you know, that, you know, you do want to, you know, upload to Training Peaks, that there's all that data right there. He'll be able to look at it, you know, with you and go over it with you and look at your heart rates and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand the whole scheduling thing. Cause my daughter, Sammy, she's training right now to do a half marathon. Mm. And so she's got some online thing schedule where she runs a certain amount every day and does this and that, and like she spent a couple of days at home with us over the weekend, Thursday through Saturday, and she's like, oh, I gotta run 4 miles today. And so she went out and ran, and then the next day she's like, I gotta run 6 miles tonight, you want to go with me on your bike and follow me? So Mies and I went and followed her, but I was just like, well, why 6 today? She goes, that's what the program says. I got to do it like that. But did you know that Scott Sports makes really high-end running shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like they make goggles, they make mountain bikes, they make ski stuff. But yeah, so John Knowles has helped Sam out with her running shoes. And she unboxed a new pair of Scott running shoes the other day. And she's like, it's like clouds.
That's awesome.
But and then even their protection stuff, right?
Yeah,
that chest protector and
I was wearing that thing when I went down.
Yeah, but
Ari, are you worried Brandon's going to be a little harder on you since he knows you? You know your relationship?
No, I mean, he's starting off my program. Like, he knows I haven't done anything. Like, I've just been glued to the couch for the past year. So we're starting out slow and working our way up. Like, the gym workout he had me do on Friday, like, it had me sore the entire weekend, you know? So that's kind of a bummer. But, you know, we're it's just, you know, small increments. Wait, each day.
Let's document this then. What were the baseline stats?
Yeah, we should start off with that.
What do you mean baseline stats? Like, you know,
weight,
LBs, weight, height,
and pant size.
Oh, I got my weight over here, dude. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk
Wasn't
about
it
the
Sean
weight.
Collier's number?
Huh? Yeah.
Wasn't it Sean Collier's number?
You're right on. You're right on the spot.
That's yeah. good.
But that was with like my shoes, like shirt, hat, shorts on, you know what I mean? I have my weigh scale in my office, you know, because we have a little deal going with the office here. So it's Biggest Loser.
I like that you got a lot of accountability buddies.
And you're wearing size 34 hardware pants right now.
I haven't got new pants yet. I've been trying to ride out the dream with 32s, but yeah, so that, I mean, they're all pretty much blown through at the moment just because I've been trying to ride it out for too long. So I will be ordering some new 34 pants. I know a guy, so yeah.
Yeah, and O'Neill pants are oversized, so that's 36 in any other brand.
Nah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, what size do you wear, Chase?
I'm with Alex on that one. Yeah. I don't wear dirt bike gear, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the thing with me is, like, the first place I gain weight is my legs. You know, like, I have big thighs, fat ass. Yeah. So it's like, it's just tough. It's tough to find clothes that fit.
Mm-hmm. Volcom.
Yeah.
Volcom pants.
Yeah.
It's the only pants I fit. Yeah.
That's true. Pants. Yeah. The Volcom pants are good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will say that, dude, I pretty much have all the parts for that Elsinore. So that's what I've been working on. I need to send you a little Elsinore picture, but I got my Nolene suspension back. So I went with Nolene just with this one. And then I got my engine back, everything. It's freaking sweet. So I'm excited about that.
It's going to be so sad when you race that day in the dirt and break it in half.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm not going to break it in half.
No, you are. No.
My dad hit up like one of his like machine shops to get me a new steering stem because like on the old Elsinores, they used to bend. And yeah, it's nuts. Like I had to get like a new steering stem and all kinds of stuff. What's that?
You should sleeve the frame and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I need to do something. I don't even know if I want to ride it. I don't know. One of my buddies, Joe Kleppy from back in Tennessee, sent me like this DG jersey that he had at his house. So hell, I might have to like wear that. I got a DG pipe for it and stuff. So yeah, dude. I don't know.
Is the pipe the muffler is built into the pipe, like it's one piece, or is it a separate muffler?
That's cool.
Separate one. No. Well, so the stock one's a separate one. Like it has like a pickle and like the regular pipe, but it was too rusted to fix. So I need to sell the little pickles are going on eBay for like $500 or something. So I might post that thing up and sell it. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the thing, it's going to be a cool looking motorcycle. I don't know. I might have to put it in my office or something.
Did you play with like high-end RC cars as like a teenager or a child or anything? Okay, this is what I've heard that vintage bikes are compared to, like the finickiness of and everything breaking all the time. Like, oh, is my nitro engine going to run well with this jetting here? And you're always playing with the air screw. I heard that you better get ready for that because that's what somebody told me when I bought mine. Hmm. Patience is a virtue.
Yours that's in a box?
Is in two boxes? Three boxes. The pictures of me tearing that down from 10 years ago came up the other day. I was devastated. I was so pissed at myself.
10 years ago.
10 years, 10 years ago, that. Dude. Yeah. Pissed. Life comes at you fast.
Was the Elsinore purchase at Transworld around the same time as Gasoline Gate?
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. This was all, this was very much like,
Gasoline Gate?
Oh, yes.
Please, God, don't make me relive this.
Smoked out the whole office.
That's what we should do for next year's anniversary. We should tell stories.
Just tell stories.
Yeah, like our most fond memories over the years. Mm. I guess that has nothing to do with Swap My Life, but still.
But still the same crew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, We're going to wrap up this podcast this week. And
who do you guys got?
Hold on.
RJ, we gotta... or Levi?
I don't know.
I'm going to go Levi.
I'm going green.
Yeah, I kind of. Oh, go ahead, Chase.
I want Levi, but I feel like RJ, this is like he needs to do this. So
RJ's going to die trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and RJ was the best. That's also why I'm going with Levi. That's also why I'm going with Levi. Because that red plate is heavy.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of like everybody. Like, I think everybody wants to see RJ do it because it's been so long. But everybody kind of believes that Levi's going to do it because he's been so strong the last little bit. But, dude, I can't believe that it's coming down to a tie like this, too. And then they're even on wins, which is even crazier. And then you have... like we mentioned earlier, the three variables of Jordan, Joe, and Nate Thrasher that made it interesting too. Like two, one mechanical that Joe had, this would be a very different championship. But unfortunately, it is what it is. Hey, before we wrap up,
dude, what if we have like a finale that goes back to like Zacho and Joey, right? Where Zacho or something happens to Zacho first lap, and then Joey just, you know, he's falling back and he has arm pump, whatever. And then it comes down to like the last lap, last turn. And one of them just gets punted off the track.
I'm here very for high, it. Very high chance that this could happen too.
right. So
before we wrap up, we got to talk about Mathis's LCQ race because we even put some money in. I know A-Ray, you threw some dollars in for the bonus. I did one too. And then Don with SML, we did one. Logan Lightsell, I'm pretty sure, picked up our money because when they did the staggered restart, that man just veered right and let everyone go by so he could get our $500. And then when he came
for last.
And then when he came by me on the start straight away, he did the dollar sign to the camera and then did an air wheelie over the finish. I don't know who won the hard charger. I think that might be Big Hill. And then, Avery, who was sketchiest? How did you determine that?
I believe, who was it? It might have been, it might have been Slosher. I don't know. I'll have to go back and look.
Because Hunter did that whole second race with no rear fender because his got taken off in a first lap crash. That was big. Big Hill was ripping, flying. And then shout out to Jeremy Hand because Jeremy was doing very, very well and was on pace to get some podium money until the last few laps. But yeah, it was a good race.
Lightsell. He dates. Remember his girlfriend races, right? She dates Jamie Astudillo, the girl we went to Singapore with.
Yeah, Lightsell. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. He races her bike, I think, or something.
What? No, she rides a KTM.
No, I thought on her Instagram a while back, she's like, not bad for racing his girlfriend's bike. I don't
know. Huh.
Oh,
yeah, not sure.
You mentioned Zacho earlier. Is there still any momentum behind the rumor he's coming back for motocross?
No, he broke some ribs, and it sounds like that went.
Yeah, he took JG's bike, hit him at Day in the Dirt in Florida, and busted his ribs, so that killed the dream there.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to wrap up this edition of the Kickstart Podcast presented by Pro Taper. Thank you guys for listening in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Since 1991, Pro Taper has led the way in premium control components and prides themselves on providing an exciting, innovative, and complete product line to fulfill the needs of professional racers and weekend riders alike. Through revolutionary ideas like the oversized 1 1/8-inch handlebar and the micro handlebar kit, the only control system purpose-built for youth riders, Pro Taper continues to push the limits and transform how we experience riding our motorcycles. Visit ProTaper.com for more.